views and opinions expressed by callers, guests, and hosts do not necessarily reflect those of the Black Talk Radio Network and Black Talk Media Project. Black Talk Radio is new black media for the new millennium.
Good morning. It is 11:02 a.m. I'm Angel Fall. You are listening to Victims to Victorious on the BlackTalkRadioNetwork.com. The title of today's show is Background Check. Who wants them? Who needs them? We're going to do a little bit of background and look at current articles considering this as a choice to restrain guns from getting in hands of prohibited people. And that's the national background check. I want to give the listeners a little bit of the actual background of the background check. One article that was posted about 4 hours ago now, Eastern Time on CNN's feed, cnn.com/2019/09/09, Opinions Congress, Stop Gun Violence. This is a transcript of the interview with the man, Andrew McCabe, who is a leader in the FBI. And I'm going to read a little bit about it. I actually saw part of, he's often on CNN as an expert. And if you go to the CNN website and type in Andrew McCabe, for instance, you'll be able to see some of the live interviews of him that are embedded in or near the article, linked to the article. So here is something that has been in the news lately, and the article asks questions. But do people really understand the current state of firearm background checks? Does the public know who does them and why? And do people know what the law requires? Do they understand how the immense volume of checks creates challenges to getting the job done? So he answered, as leader in the FBI, I had the opportunity to work closely with folks who ran the National Instant Background Check System. For the listeners, that's often called NICS. He goes on to say, I have tremendous respect for them, the demands of their work, and the professional way they do it. As a gun owner and a former FBI fire instructor, I also respect the Second Amendment, again, I'm quoting Andrew McCabe, and appreciate the importance of doing background checks in a way that does not unduly burden law-abiding citizens. From this experience, I know that there are two simple changes Congress could make to the existing law that would make NICS more effective and the country safer. So he starts to list that. I'm not going to read all of it. I just want to give you a little bit of the current discussion. The FBI, again, I'm reading from the article on CNN, the FBI does the background check for 30 states, 5 U.S. territories, and the District of Columbia. 13 states do their own checks, and 7 others complete theirs in some level of partnership with the FBI. It's hard to overstate the enormity of the work, the article continues. The FBI services requests from over 49,000 federally licensed firearm dealers. The FBI said that in 2018, it processed background checks for 8,235,342 firearms transactions. I'm going to give that number again. The FBI last year, remember, those of you who are following me, we know that when we look at real research, it's a retrospective case scenario. You're looking back on the data that you've collected to help you predict the trends of the future. So the FBI says that in 2018, it processed 8,235,342 firearms transactions, while the states processed an additional 5 million plus. Only 99,000 of these transactions were denied. Since 2012, six of the top highest volume days at NICS occurred on the Friday after Thanksgiving in 2018. As Americans digested their Thanksgiving turkey, NICS processed 182,000 background checks, which was the fourth highest volume that they processed in history. The vast majority of NICS work is done automatically. More than 80% of checks are done online, according to the NICS 2018 operations report. And of the 1.5 million in 2018 conducted by telephone calls, 83% were answered within 20 seconds. But this is the easy work. Checks that result in approval when the purchaser does not match any record in the database, or denials when the purchaser's clear match to a prohibiting record. And this is me speaking. We've talked about this a couple of times. There are a list of people who should be prohibited from getting guns. Last week, Scotty Reed, our sound engineer, he mentioned that Dylan Roof slipped through the background check run by the federal government, and now a lower court has ruled that his victims in the South Carolina shooting can sue the federal government for negligence because the background check was not done properly for Dylan Roof. And of course, he killed nine people at a Bible study at the Emmanuel AME Church in Charleston, South Carolina. It's 8 minutes after. If you just tuned in, this is Victims to Victorious, and we're discussing background checks. Who needs them and why? So the CNN article, they're interviewing Andrew McCabe, who is working hard with other people in Congress to make sure that it's updated and it's done properly. He also lists the Dylan Roof case that I just mentioned. And again, that number is staggering. The FBI and state process 1.5 million checks, background checks. And that resulted in only 92,000 people being denied guns. So if you have an opinion, if you were denied a gun, if you were denied or didn't get through the background check, we'd like to know about it. If you don't believe universal background checks are necessary, we'd like to know about it. I began with an article that was just posted on CNN about 4 minutes ago, and then I want to go to the actual background, some actual background of why we have background checks. And, of course, part of that would be the Brady Law, because he got a gun, and he was clearly mentally ill, and he's the person who tried to kill President Reagan. So I'm giving a little more of the background check, and we're going to discuss the loophole, because why is this so important? A whole group of people who don't want the background check are people who are collecting guns and purchasing guns from private dealers. Currently, federal law, I'm reading from Wikipedia, law requires background checks through the National Instant Criminal Background Check System. We gave that acronym earlier. It accounts for 78% of all gun sales in the United States. Now, why is that important to know? Many, many people who are interested in background checks becoming applicable to private gun sales. And here is an example of why those people are advocating for that. Do the math, 22% of sales are off the books. Reading from Wikipedia again, after the Columbine High School massacre in April 1999, gun shows and background checks became a focus of national debate. In May, the executive vice president of the National Rifle Association, which is, of course, the NRA, told the House Judiciary Committee on Crime, "We think it is reasonable to provide mandatory instant criminal background checks for every sale at every gun show." Those concerned about the show believe that they were a source of illegally trafficked firearms. Of course they are. This is me speaking off directly to you. Of course they are. Those guns are trafficked, if you will, and then we're going to start talking about straw buyers. So currently there's still the private sale exemption where the federal law is concerned, but some states do have, Washington, D.C., we mentioned that a couple of weeks ago, if you sell a gun privately, you are required to do the background check yourself for the purchaser. In August 2010, the New England Journal of Medicine published an article, and it looks at the private party gun sales through screening and record-keeping process that some people keep. 83% of self-reported gun owners and 87% of the general population endorsed regulation for all private gun sales in a 2008 poll. Gun owners, interestingly enough, gave stronger support to all-inclusive approach than to a gun show only in a 2009 poll that was also used in the publication of this article. I've mentioned Sandy Hook before. Sandy Hook, the case of Anamlaz at Sandy Hook also allowed the state of Connecticut and other gun researchers to take a look at universal background checks more closely. And although this isn't the subject today, we also talked about the amount of ammunition you could have last week. And the state of Connecticut changed that law after the Sandy Hook Elementary School massacre. If you just tuned in, I'm Angel Fall. We are discussing background checks, who wants them, who needs them. So most people want them. Universal background checks, according to Wikipedia, enjoy a high level of public support. A 2016 representative survey found that 86% of U.S. registered voters supported the measure. Let me know if you support the measure. Go to blacktalkradionetwork.com, and you can also, if you're listening, you can also give us a call. Let us know if you believe in the background checks or not, 704-802-5056. Now, a lot of times the gun debate seems to be politicized and polarized between Republicans and Democrats. It still is. According to Wikipedia, in 2015, large majorities of American adults, both Republicans and Democrats, supported background checks for private sales and at gun shows, according to the Pew Research Center. The Pew Research Center does a lot of research. You can go online, click on them, and look up a variety of things. In 2017, the strong majority of American adults, both gun owners and non-gun owners, wanted background checks for private sales at gun shows. Again, this is according to the Pew Research Center. So all of these, in the Wikipedia article, it's interesting. Every time there is a mass shooting, they are looking at attitudes of gun owners and non-gun owners. So the 2017-2018 work is centered around previous events. So after the Stoneman Douglas High School shooting in Parkland, Florida, nearly all Americans supported universal background checks. 88% of registered voters supported universal background checks, according to a Political Morning Consult poll. So again, this article takes a look at attitudes right after a mass shooting has occurred. Please follow me on Twitter. I am on air. Hashtag on air angel on Twitter. Hashtag on air angel. There are other hashtags that are out there that are still trending. Hashtag Alabama shooting. Hashtag D'Angelo Parnell. He was the one that shot up the football game. Hashtag football shooting. Hashtag and gun violence. And my hashtag is check your microphone and leave your 9 at home. Give us a call if you're listening live, 704-802-5056.
Hey, good morning. I just wanted to chime in there. I heard the statistics from the poll that a majority of citizens support universal background checks. You know, I support them too. I'm more interested in the minority who doesn't support universal background checks and what their reasoning is for that. I imagine, like, for example, you mentioned that they don't have them at gun shows and it's not required at gun shows. And I imagine that gun sellers are the ones who are lobbying against, you know, that new rule, because it would cost them more money, I imagine. You know, as a person who has worked in the retail, you know, you can go to, like, these type of trade shows and things of that nature, and they'll be able to run your credit card, you know, because they make remote devices in order for them to be able to do that. So I don't know if there's anything out there similar to that which will allow them to plug in and run a background check. I don't know, but I imagine, you know, they're worried about these additional things cutting into their profits. That's the only logical reason I could think of a why a person would be against background checks.
That's a very good thing to bring up, Scotty. In preparing for the show, one of the facts I uncovered about this group of people are who are opposed to it. There's a group of people who are gun hobbyists. I'm using the word hobby, not lobby, and they are unlicensed dealers. Like, in other words, they have a basement or a garage full of guns that they routinely sell. And so they're selling those guns under the table. And so they're a group of people who purposely avoid having a license to sell so that they can do two things. They can circumvent the background check. They can also circumvent sales taxes, okay? And then this group of people are very anti-government. They feel very strongly, this is why they're often associated with the Republicans, because one of the platforms of being a Republican is you want less government, not more. So they don't want the government to intrude, and they are operating under the radar like this. And this 22% or so group of people who are owning and exchanging guns, I was going to discuss them later, and you brought them up. They're participating in the trafficking and the straw purchasing. Now, did I answer your question, Scotty? I hope I did. Okay, he dropped out for a second.
Yes,
all right.
Yes,
then.
You did. Yes, the answer is money. The answer is money.
Yes. The answer is money. And for the FBI and law enforcement, one of the things that they don't like about this is then if the guns are sold privately, not only is the purchaser getting underneath the radar, the purchaser could be a prohibited person. He could be a mentally ill person. He could be a person with a violent misdemeanor conviction. He could be a person who's got a restraining order against him from his wife or girlfriend or baby mama, but he's buying the gun under the radar. So these things are very alarming. So that was one of the extra things I would like to add. So gun purchases at gun shows and between private people that don't have to run background checks are a serious concern for law enforcement, because these guns are untraceable and they become part of the trafficking and crime statistic, if you will. And Scotty's question leads to the next subject of trafficking and straw purchasing. Now, this comes from the lawcenter.giffords.org, and they have spent a whole lot of time and energy tracking and advocating how these policies could be changed. And of course, people will recognize Giffords. As we know, she was shot, and she immediately became an advocate because she was a victim. And so her center, Giffords Law Center, talks about trafficking and straw purchasing. So I'm going to define that for the listeners. Gun trafficking refers to the diversion of guns from lawful commerce into the illegal market. So with Scotty's question, we're looking at transactions that are under the table that probably are going into the illegal market. The person very often may be purchasing it so that it's untraceable. We began our series discussing African American male homicides. Most of those handguns are illegal, unregistered, and they're part of the problem because they are being transacted under the table, no background check, to people who are prohibited, including convicted felons, etc. So traffic guns, according to Giffords.org, undermine the strong laws some states have enacted, with studies showing that traffic guns are a major driver of crime. Some of the listeners might be unaccustomed to hearing the word trafficked for weapons. Probably used to hearing it about women and children in developing countries and here in the United States. But here we're using the word traffic to mean guns that are purchased illegally or purchased under the radar, sold to people who are in prohibited classes, and then used for crime. So their language here is, and this is somewhat of the epidemiology language, when something is driven, an epidemic is driven by a certain fact or pathogen, etc. So gun violence, criminal gun violence is driven by traffic guns. Nearly two-thirds of crime guns recovered in states with strong gun laws were originally sold in states with weak gun laws. Again, if you're online, follow me, lawcenter.gifford.org. Studies of crime gun recoveries in Chicago, New York City, and Boston, those are three great cities to discuss good representations of gun violence, being overrepresented in gun violence. Let me clean that up. Studies of crime gun recoveries in Chicago, New York City, and Boston, all cities with states with strong gun laws, show that as many as 87% of the firearms used in crimes in these cities are trafficked from other states which often have weaker gun laws. States with strong gun laws see increased rates of gun homicide and gun crime when the border states have weak gun laws. We had a caller a couple weeks ago who called in and said she lives in D.C., and her part of D.C. and Connecticut Avenue, you can walk into Maryland, and the law in Maryland and Virginia concerning gun purchasing, the laws are not as tight and strict as they are in the actual District of Columbia. And, of course, the District of Columbia borders Maryland and Virginia. Straw purchasing, now I'm going to define that. Straw purchasing, according to Giffords.org, is a purchase where the purchaser is actually buying a gun on behalf of a prohibited purchaser, and it's the most common channel identified in trafficking investigations. So a woman with no criminal background might go into a licensed gun dealer and purchase a gun. She gets through the background check, she does the paperwork, but her ex-boyfriend is really giving her a couple hundred dollars to do it. That would be an example of how that type of purchase is made. Going back to the Giffords article, data from a national survey of firearm licenses suggests that there are more than 30,000 attempted straw purchasers each year. A representative survey found that more than two-thirds of dealers experienced at least one attempted straw purchase in the year preceding the survey. Researchers have also found that gun dealers are willing to make gun sales under conditions that suggest straw purchases. And Scotty had chimed in and said, this is driven by money. Of course it is, because they are in the business of selling guns. It is their storefront. They have to have heat. They have to have electricity. They have to have security. They have to pay their employees. So some of them have been caught looking the other way. Although the majority of trafficking investigations involve straw purchases, and this is returning to the lawcenter.giffords.org article, corrupt retail gun dealers account for a higher volume of guns diverted into the illegal market than any other single trafficking channel. So I'm going to reemphasize corrupt retail gun dealers. So in preparing for the show, I discovered that there are licensed gun dealers who just blatantly don't do what the law asks them to do. Researchers estimate that nationwide, approximately 2,000 firearm dealers and pawnbrokers knowingly sell firearms illegally, engaging in behavior including failing to keep required records, transferring to prohibited persons, making false entries in record books, and conducting illegal out-of-state transfers. While this data indicates that a very small proportion of gun dealers sell the majority of guns traced to crime, a national phone survey of retail gun dealers found that half of the gun dealers indicated a willingness to make a sale under circumstances of questionable legality. Again, reading from the article. Another part of the straw purchasing, importantly, when retail sellers of firearms are held accountable for bad business practices, often after undercover investigations by law enforcement, the flow of new guns in the illicit market often decreases significantly. And what they mean here is there have been stings where the FBI goes around to a gun dealer and they pose as a couple and someone is prohibited in the couple from purchasing the gun, and they let the dealer make the purchase, and then they tell them that it's happened, and then the dealer has to pay a fine. Again, Scotty's point is this is money driven. Paying a fine becomes a problem for the licensed gun dealer because he or she is trying to make money. And now you have money going out because you committed an illegal transaction. Now you're fined. And of course, the fine is way more than the transaction. So the final part of their article, which we touched on a little bit, is they want the loophole behind the private sales closed. So I'm reading from the article. Guns purchased from unlicensed sellers are also an important source of guns diverted to the illegal market. Closing this loophole and requiring background checks on all gun sales can significantly reduce the number of guns that enter to the illegal market. Nearly a quarter of American gun owners obtained their most recently purchased firearm without a background check. Private party transactions are a particular appealing source of guns for criminals and gun traffickers. Approximately 80% of all the firearms acquired for criminal purposes are obtained from unlicensed sellers. I mentioned earlier, I'm reading that from the article, that most of the guns used in the African-American black-on-black male crimes are unlicensed, and they are illegal, and they've been trafficked. States without universal background check laws, export crime guns to cross state lines at a 30% higher rate than states that require background checks on all gun sales. So in other words, the article is saying people who know, look, I can drive into Maryland, I can drive into Virginia and conduct the business and come back without trouble, are going to do that. So if universal background checks were applied, that's what we're discussing here, to all sales, including the purchase, the private ones. When they say unlicensed gun dealers in the article, they don't necessarily, I don't want the listeners to get an idea of, you know, just the traffickers. They also mean individuals. You buy the gun from your neighbor, you buy the gun from your brother-in-law. Guns are stolen from people's homes and then used in crime. So those are some of the facts behind the straw purchasing and the trafficking. So I want to remind the listeners of the federal law. And the Gifford Center is good about critiquing and asking for things to be tightened up and closed in favor of the safety of the public. So this article states definitively, no clear and effective federal statute makes gun trafficking a federal crime. Federal law makes certain people, such as convicted felons, ineligible to purchase or possess firearms. Federal law also makes it unlawful for any person to sell or otherwise dispose of a firearm to a person if the seller has reasonable cause to believe he or she falls within one of these categories. And they described the universal background checks earlier, And I just want to remind people that is exactly what we are talking about. Summation again of a straw purchaser. A straw purchaser buys a firearm from a licensed firearm dealer on behalf of another person. Straw purchases are illegal because federal law criminalizes the making of false statements to a dealer about a material fact. A straw purchaser therefore commits a federal crime by falsely stating that he or she is the actual gun buyer. In a successful straw purchase, the actual buyer has also committed a federal crime by aiding and abetting the straw purchaser or causing or the making of the false statement. There's a famous case in 2013 of Abramski versus U.S. The U.S. Supreme Court again affirmed that these federal laws prohibit straw purchasing. And of course, people who work in law enforcement are interested in tracing guns when a crime occurs, because if you can go back to the licensed owner or the name of the gun shop where the gun was purchased, it starts helping the law enforcement people to solve these crimes faster. About one third of the states have laws that prosecutors may use to penalize gun purchasers who intend to traffic the gun in certain circumstances. California right now has the strongest anti-trafficking law of this type. California law prohibits acquiring a firearm for the purpose of selling, loaning, or transferring it. So that's what the straw buyer does each time. If we have live listeners in California, I know they're really early in the morning, but that's the beauty of the national platform and the computer. You can call in to 704-802-5056. Okay, it's a little bit after 11:30. We should have taken a station break. We will do so now in Angel Fall with Victims to Victory.
You are tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
All right, it is 11:30 a.m. Eastern Time. I am Angel Fall. You're listening to Victims to Victorious on the Black Talk Radio Network. We're live right now, and we're discussing background checks. Of course, background checks, ways to attend general discussion of trafficking and straw buyers. I want to reach out to listeners who might be in any of these states. There are seven states, we just discussed California, that penalize sellers who supply firearms to traffickers. Seven states, and that includes California, no surprise. It's consistently one of the states with the strongest, tightest gun laws. California, Connecticut, again, I've mentioned before, the Sandy Hook shooting changed Connecticut gun law permanently. California, Connecticut, Maryland, Minnesota, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, and Rhode Island. They all have laws that may facilitate prosecution of individuals who transfer firearms to traffickers under certain circumstances. Since California has the strongest law, I'm just going to read a little bit about that law. This is from the lawcenter.gifford.org. California prohibits a person from transferring a firearm to any person he or she has cause to believe it's not the actual transferee of the firearm, provided he or she knows that the firearm is to be subsequently transferred illegally. California also prohibits people from supplying ammunition to any person they know or reasonably should know is prohibited from possessing ammunition. In addition, it is illegal in California for a person to supply ammunition to a straw purchaser with knowledge or cause to believe that the straw purchaser would subsequently provide the ammunition to a prohibited person. And that's very important. The Connecticut law after Newtown limited types of ammunition and quantities of ammunition. If you just tuned in, it is 11:36. You're listening to Victims to Victorious, and we are discussing background checks. Now, how are the background checks conducted? Listeners might wonder. I mentioned it a little bit earlier. It's called NICS. It is the National Instant Criminal Background Check System, NICS. And I'm reading from the FBI site, FBI.gov. The National Instant Criminal Background Check, or NICS, is all about saving lives and protecting people from harm by not letting guns fall into the wrong hands. It also ensures the timely transfer of firearms to eligible gun buyers. Earlier in the show, I mentioned the importance of the Brady Handgun Act. So this was the progenitor of the NICS. Mandated by Brady Handgun Violence Prevention Act of 1993 and launched by the FBI on November 3, 1998, NICS is used by the federal firearms licensees to instantly determine whether a prospective buyer is eligible to buy firearms. Earlier in the show, I mentioned that most of it is done on the phone, about, I believe, 83%. Before ringing up the sale, cashiers, this is how it works. Before ringing up the sale, cashiers call in a check to the FBI or other designated agencies to ensure that each customer does not have a criminal record or isn't otherwise ineligible to make a purchase. As we've spoken before, a couple of these mass shooters have gotten through the system, and many of the teenage mass shooters are really using guns they find in their home or in the homes of friends or other relatives. So the FBI says that more than 230 million such checks have been made in total since they started, leading to more than 1.3 million denials. The numbers I gave earlier were just for 2018. There are about 92,000 denials. But in its entirety, the time that the NICS has been running, there have been 1.3 million denials. So the actual office is located in Clarksburg, West Virginia. And I mentioned earlier in the show, there are 30 states who use this service directly. 5 U.S. territories, and the District of Columbia. Upon completion of the required Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosive Form 4473, the FFLs contacted the NICS section via toll-free number or electronically on the Internet to request a background check. And it's consequently, I'm not reading here, it should be ready in less than 24 hours. It should be, the NCIS is customarily available 17 hours a day. My mistake. It only takes a few seconds, as I mentioned earlier, for the background. But it is available to the 30 states who subscribe to it 17 hours a day. Now, I am looking for people who might have been wrongfully denied a firearm transfer, didn't get through the background check. I'd like to hear from you if that has happened to you. We have about 20 minutes left. You can, of course, if you are listening live, and you can follow me on Twitter, On Air Angel. And if you go to the blacktalkradionetwork.com site, you can see shows that are archived and the other subjects that we have discussed. And please leave a comment. That would be a wonderful thing for me and help get the discussion going. So the Brady Handgun Violence Prevention Act of 1993 is the forebearer of the NICS background check. So many gun advocates and people who don't own guns, it's close statistically, want these background checks, because they prohibit certain people from obtaining a gun. If you are going to one of the licensed gun dealers in the 30 states that participate directly in the FBI-supported version, they make a phone call or send your paperwork electronically. It takes a few seconds, and then you are confirmed or denied. So if you are a firearms licensee, I hope I'm pronouncing that right, There are links on the FBI page for that. If you've been denied a weapon, the website also has an appeals process. Appeals, and I'm going to look at that for a second. It has an appeals process, and you can sign on to FBI.gov/services, and you will, if you type in background check, you will see there's also an index where you can search alphabetically. So the NICS is a name system check that requires, background checks from licensed gun dealers. There is a form that you can get, a voluntary appeal file application. It's in English and Spanish, Archivo de Apelación Voluntaria. I don't have the best accent, but it is in English and Spanish. You can print it out and download it. And you can also email them, NICS@FBI.gov, or write them old school snail mail. So those are some resources for the listener. We've got a little more than 15, about 18 minutes to go. So what have we been discussing here so far? Is background checks save lives. Why? Because they keep the guns out of the hands of people who are prohibited from using them. Earlier in the season, when we began, I gave you a statistic that researchers study often, and they keep, one thing when you study research or you conduct research, certain results you're expecting to get or be able to duplicate, and certain trends are going to remain, the facts. They're going to remain a certain way unless something changes in the larger body of society. So what are some of the important reasons that background checks should be enforced? We've mentioned before, background checks keep prohibited users from obtaining these weapons. So if you have prohibited users, you're going to reduce, and we're back to the epidemiology language, you're going to reduce the number of morbidity and mortality, because those people who are prone to violence are not going to be able to obtain the most lethal form of weaponry, which is a gun. Also, if there are people, we mentioned this before, white men are most likely to use a gun that's in their home on themselves. So here's the scenario for you. There is a white man out here who has a felony conviction, and he is suicidal. His guns have been removed for another reason, or moving, or sold off. Now he wants to purchase a gun. So if he purchases a gun, he knows he cannot go to a gun dealer who's going to do the real background check. So he is going to go to a gun dealer, or he's going to go to a person who is a private seller, we mentioned. The Gifford Center likes to call them illegal, but people who are private sellers. Private sellers, remember at this point, do not have to get a license, because it is considered a personal transaction. And they do not have to complete background checks. So he can also go in this particular scenario, the white man with the felony conviction who no longer has weapons, who wants to acquire a weapon, he can show up at a gun show as of this date, and he can acquire a weapon without a background check. So some, all the states, again, this is also part of the problem, all the states don't have the same rules for transferring guns. They don't all have the same way they do the background check, even though it is the federal law. So I'd like for you to continue listening, because I want to take over take that discussion over to a much more sensitive part of being a prohibited user. In my scenario, I mentioned that there is a white man who is thinking of committing suicide. His weapons have been removed before. For whatever reason, he has a felony conviction. He's trying to purchase a gun. So people who contemplate suicide definitely come under this category we're going to discuss called mental health reporting. I'm returning to the lawcenterofgiffords.org to discuss some of it. So mental health reporting, we have found with some of these mass shooters, would have been very helpful in stopping them from obtaining a weapon. I'm reading from the article on mental health reporting at getlawcenter.gifford.org. So Virginia Tech was one situation, and the Aurora shooter in Colorado, that was another situation where a mentally ill person was able to obtain a gun. So I'm just going to let the listeners, remind the listeners a little bit about the aftermath of Virginia Tech, because this is where it really starts to get people talking about this. The aftermath of Virginia Tech, the most tragic incident involving a state failure to report mental health records, occurred in April 2007 when Virginia Tech student Song Ho Choi shot and killed 32 people and injured 17 others before committing suicide on the college campus in Blacksburg, Virginia. Cho was, in fact, prohibited from purchasing a firearm under federal law because of a history of mental illness. However, the unstable gunman, I'm reading from the article, was able to purchase firearms through two licensed dealers after two background checks. While Virginia law at the time, now see the law has been changed, Virginia law at the time required that some mental health records be submitted to the database used for background checks. It did not require reporting of all people prohibited from possessing firearms for mental health reasons. So that helped change the law and made states more diligent. Now, the Gifford Center wants states to be more diligent, and they want to increase the states that report. Other mass shootings, reading from the article, including those in Tucson, Arizona on January 8th, 2011, in Aurora, Colorado on July 20th, 2012, and Newtown, Connecticut on December 14th, have also resulted in renewed calls for better law addressing guns and mental illness. Our nation's leader, including President Obama, that this is because that's when the article was written, before the new president took over, they have joined these calls and states have begun to respond. The number of mental health records in NICS increased by more than 700% between the Virginia Tech shooting and January 31st, 2014. As of January 31st, 2014, there are over 3 million mental health records in NICS, with over 1 million records added in 2013 alone. So a lot of people who are not fans of the government, They reject this kind of reporting. A lot of people, a lot of health advocates are concerned that the mental health records will be compromised somehow and someone will be discriminated against or not seek treatment. When mental health information is submitted to NICS, it can be effective at preventing firearms transfers by licensed dealers to dangerous people. The article's using the word dangerous here. A lot of the researchers like the word prohibited, from prohibited purchasers. In 2005, of the total number of prospective purchasers who were denied following an FBI background check, only 0.5% were denied for mental health reasons. By 2010, this number had risen to 1.8%. Mental health records in the system blocked 316 gun sales in Virginia in 2013. That was from the article. Remember, we began with saying that the Virginia Tech shooting caused this to be revisited. And of course, the shooting of President Reagan turned into the Brady Act. That caused it too. Unfortunately, these tragedies get people mobilized. They get politicians mobilized. And we get to see the law change. There's lots of room for more laws change. as I'm sitting here, I'm always trying to advocate for public health solutions. Well, removing guns from prohibited people is a public health solution. It uses the technology to prevent people who need to seek mental health services, increase their treatment that they're getting from their healthcare provider, versus solving their problem with a handgun or a long gun. When mental health information is submitted, it can be very effective from getting firearms transferred to dangerous people. And of course, this harkens back to what we said about trafficking and straw purchases. So some of the definition of who is dangerous, I'm going to give some of that, because even before the Brady Act, there was a law in 1968 called the Gun Control Act that prohibited any person from selling or transferring a firearm or ammunition to somebody who, the language was very general here, the Giffords Law Center reports that the law said adjudicated as mental defective or committed to any mental institution. So the law's amplified a little bit more. It says that a prohibited person could be a danger to himself or others, and a prohibited person can also be lack the mental capacity to contract or manage his or her own affairs. Now, a lot of times people think of, you know, mentally ill people as just being in the institution. At the time that the law was written, that was certainly a definition. But those of you who are old enough to know, remember, there were lots of places where mentally ill people were actually housed. Then a lot of that broke down and they're housed in smaller group homes. Better medication came along, better awareness of mental health came along. So I want to give a list, a little more amplified list of prohibited users. We have about 7 minutes left. We've been talking about background checks. Now I'm talking about the whole class of people who will be denied if the check process goes through properly. Those who've been convicted of violent or gun-related misdemeanors. Of course, public health and policymakers will know that a person who has committed a violent crime in the past, it's indicative of his committing or her committing a violent crime in the future. People in prohibited class also include those with a history of abusing alcohol or drugs, also those convicted of juvenile offenses, and then additional people who have suffered from severe mental illness. Reading from the Giffords article, expanding state laws to cover these categories of individuals would close a glaring gap in federal law that makes it easier for guns to fall into the wrong hands. Now, last week we did a show, or 2 weeks ago we did a show where we looked at the huge differences in all 50 states and certain things that the federal government does not even have in place. There is no federal law concerning keeping handguns out of children and locking them in a safe place. That's done by states and jurisdictions. So, again, the group of prohibited users, who have violent or gun-related misdemeanors, alcohol abusers, drug offenders, juvenile offenders, the dangerously mentally ill, additionally, individuals on the terror watch list. So Americans say they want background checks, and we need them. They would have helped if they had been more accurate in certain mass shooting cases. There's also many states don't allow domestic, many states are enacting stronger laws to prevent people who have committed domestic violence from obtaining a firearm. So federal law, this is just the federal law establishes the baseline regarding the types of persons who are ineligible to purchase firearms. The federal law of 1968, which was already in place, has these people listed, has been convicted of or is under indictment for a crime punishable by imprisonment for more than 1 year, is a fugitive from justice, is an unlawful user of addicted to a controlled or can is an unlawful user of addiction. I'm so sorry. It's unlawful user of an addictive drug or a controlled substance. Sorry, finally got that out. And is underage, has been adjudicated as a mental defective or committed to a mental institution, is unlawfully in the United States, or has been admitted to the U.S. under a non-immigrant visa, has been dishonorably discharged from the military, has renounced his or her citizenship, is subject to a court order restraining him or her from harassing, stalking, or threatening an intimate partner. So that's a recent occurrence of the law. And that law has proven, again, very effective prohibiting an abuser from getting hold of a firearm, because he is most likely to use it on the person who filed the charges against him or her, I should say. Many states, of course, recognize domestic violence between same-sex partners as well. If you're following me online, you can go to thelawcenter.giffords.org, and you can look at the summary of the state law of all the people who are prohibited. Each state still has differences, for instance, in how they define the legal age or the minimum age to purchase a firearm. Excuse me. We have about 3 minutes to go. A couple hours, you will be able to listen to the podcast uploaded to blacktalkradionetwork.com. If you want to leave a comment there, look for today's show, and you're welcome to leave a comment. So I have been discussing who should be prohibited from obtaining a gun, how the federal law works to exclude certain people. Some of those people include stalkers. Some of those people include convicted felons. The stalking law is much more recent attachment to that law. Stalking is a strong predictor of future violence, according to the Giffords.org Center. And when I was preparing for the show, I discovered that some jurisdictions only protect married or conjugal partners, but many states are looking at dating partners and applying the conjugal law to them. Again, from the Giffords Center, that's advocating the removal of guns from stalkers. One study of a female murder victim in 10 cities found that 76% of women murdered and 85% who survived a murder attempt by a current or former intimate partner had experienced stalking in the year preceding the murder. So that's just a little more an updated use of who is prohibited. We have been talking about background checks. I want to thank my sound engineer, Scotty Reed. I'm Angel Fall. You've been listening to Victims to Victoria. We broadcast each and every Monday. Yes, Scotty?
No, I didn't have anything.
I'm sorry? I thought you said something?
No, I didn't say anything.
Okay.
Yeah, but I know we're out of time, though. I wish we had more time. Maybe we can pick it up next week, but when you were reading the list of prohibited people, there was some issues with that, you know, in my mind. And like in terms of, let's say I'm a 16-year-old and I get into a fight. And let's say I didn't start the fight, but I still got charged. Everybody who was in this fight got charged with a misdemeanor. Okay, not a felony, but a misdemeanor. And for that to affect me later in life as an adult, if I want to purchase a firearm, I think that's kind of speaking to an unjust denial of a privilege. And I use the word privilege because I don't see gun ownership as a right anymore. I see it as a privilege. So I'm just kind of concerned. And then also when you mentioned domestic violence, people who commit acts of domestic violence not being able to purchase firearms or being forced to turn them in, as I have read a case where a person was under domestic violence order and they were supposed to turn in their weapons. But also one Police officers commit acts of domestic violence that is four times the rate of the general population, but yet, you know, they have guns. And so I, you know, again, we could really get into this, but we don't have enough time this week. But just some thoughts I had, I wanted to share.
I definitely appreciate that. And so I'm sure so do the listeners. I'm just going to give, I know we're about 1 minute over. I just want to let the listeners know that there are 9 states that prohibit stalkers from purchasing or possessing guns, and 6 states prevent people subject to domestic violence restraining orders from possessing guns. In some of those states, that's while the case is being papered or over a finite time. Like if you get charged with the domestic violence and the case is dropped, or you go to the community service and the case is dropped, your weapons can be restored in some of these states. Okay, so that's a little bit. But again, the listeners know we're looking at the fact that 50 states don't all agree on the same thing. So we could be, the laws would be better effective if they were more universally applied. And as for the juvenile convictions, I personally do know someone with a juvenile conviction who acquired a gun and then was pulled over by the police, had the gun, and now he is on probation for exactly that. The fact that he was prohibited as a 17-year-old and he was caught with one as a 50-year-old. So that would be a wonderful discussion, again, just focusing on the people who are prohibited and which states prohibit what in even finer detail. So thank you, Scotty, for chiming in with your comment and making the show run smoothly. I'm Angel Fall, and this is Victims to Victorious. Ha ha ha!